This is the Detroit Sports Podcast Network.
The biggest icon in podcasting.
Welcome in, everybody, to this week's edition of Doc and Jock. I am the Doc, John McEnroe. Joining me, my guy Adam, the Jock Strozinski. We got a great podcast for you. It's tournament time. Both Michigan State and the Oakland Golden Grizzlies are going dancing. We'll debate, see which team potentially has a chance to make a run, if at all. Does any team have a chance from Michigan to get out of the opening weekend? We'll talk about that, break it all down. Looking forward to it as always. March Madness has hit. Got to break down a couple more moves the Lions made in free agency. And we'll talk about the strategy that Brad Holmes has deployed. Do we think that Brad Holmes has done enough by adding a veteran offensive lineman? And then we got to talk about the Red Wings. Got to talk about a movement maybe that's starting to grow from the internet based on the growing losses, the way in which the team has played. They have made a move, another move to bring up a defenseman. Is that enough? We'll break that all down. Because what's happening? Really a great time now in sports. March Madness is here, and we get to break down what the Lions did and really take a look at some thoughts regarding what some outsiders are thinking about the Lions and some teams locally that have a chance to, you know, have a run in the tournament. I think it's a good time for sports, and with the Tigers kind of around the corner too in a couple of weeks, man. It's a good time for Detroit sports.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And look, this is generally one of the more enjoyable times of the year. We put a rundown together. Do you mind if we kind of scrap parts of this rundown and maybe we just start with the tournament and we start with college basketball? Because I've got a couple of thoughts, and I'm just kind of wondering where you're at with the tournament this year, because I'm not as invested in the tournament as I have been in prior years. College basketball as a whole really hasn't captured my attention. And I'm not sure if it's that Michigan's been as horrible as Michigan's been all season. I'm not sure if it's because Michigan State's been a little up and down, a little Jekyll and Hyde. This was supposed to be a really, really good team, and sometimes they show their ass when they're on the court. I'm not sure if it's maybe all the players changing teams because NIL deals. I'm not really sure what it is. But the tournament is basically here, and I'm just not ready for it. And I don't know if I'm all that invested. I know when, by the time we get to the finals, when we get to the Final Four, I'll be watching and I'll be tuned in and I'll be pumped up for it. But I remember in past years, I would be at work and I would be doing anything I could do to figure out how to watch that opening game. I would be doing anything I could do to figure out how to consume as much of it as possible, even trying to schedule days off so I could take that Thursday and Friday off so I could watch all of it. This season, this year, I'm just kind of like, all right, whatever. It's there. It's on. I mean, normally I do a bracket pool for my dad is really what it's there for. And you always get invited to it. And he called me last week and was like, hey, are you going to do it? I was like, I only do it for you. Like, if you want me to do it, I'll do it. I was like, but it's up to you, man. Like, you got to tell me if you want me to do it, because the only reason I contribute $10 to it is for you. And he's like, yeah, he's like, it's kind of fallen off the last couple of years. And at this point, it's like he does three brackets. My uncle will do two. You do one or two. You might have Andrea do one. I'll do one. It's like there's like six of us. You know what I'm saying? And it's not as big as it used to be. We used to be able to get a couple $100 in this thing, and it was great. Now it's, you know, maybe $70, and we're trying to do a payout with $70. So it's not, it seems like over the course of the last couple of years, at least in our small inner circle, the interest has kind of waned. And I know this year for me, my interest has definitely waned. I just am not there. Are you there? Do you feel the same excitement that you used to feel for this? Or is this one of those things where it's like, okay, it's here and I'll watch it because it's here and this is what we do? Or do you still get kind of that eagerness, you know, opening that opening day, that opening Thursday was just absolutely chaos and it was so much fun. And I just don't have it this year.
No, absolutely. And I was going to say, got to make the on-air decision because we've run a DSP pool, and that's fallen off as well. And I just think that, you know what? I think the decision has probably been made. I probably will not fill out a bracket. If you're okay with it, I don't think we have to activate it. I'm sorry to your dad, but here, and there's a couple reasons why. Gambling has allowed people to just bet individual games. Like, yep. You don't need a bracket. That's just another avenue of gambling, you know? And for me, I learned as much as I did throughout the whole 5 months in the 2 hours I did watch the selection show just to see if Michigan State was going to be included. And I heard some of the analysis of, oh, okay, Houston's still good. UConn, who won it last year, they're still good. Because there were really no storylines. Like, I don't know if the PR of college basketball has fallen off or the algorithms don't hit, but I didn't see nothing outside of Michigan and Juwan Howard falling off. I followed Oakland and the Horizon League because I went to Detroit Mercy, so I'm always invested in what goes on in that rivalry. But other than following Michigan State intently, you know what's going on in the Big Ten. But outside of that, national stories, I don't think hit too much. I think Caitlin Clark drew a lot of national attention.
She was more interesting than anything going on in the men's game.
So to me, I didn't think anything was interesting. Nobody was talking about anything. You hear a lot about people transferring and you hear about the money people are asking for and things like that. And I just think the game is not as interesting because a lot of the talented players go off and they're playing in the G League or they go to the NBA. So it's not as interesting. I'm not as invested, and I'm in the same boat. I will watch, obviously, Thursday at noon, the Michigan State game, MSU versus MSU. It's an interesting matchup there. I thought Michigan State was overseeded at number 9. I think that's crazy. But I just felt like, and knowing the entire depth of the field, it's literally a crapshoot. I hear what pundits say regarding the potential upsets, but some of the teams, like when they say, oh my God, Virginia should have got in, or oh my God, this Providence or this or that, I'm like, I did not hear a single storyline about any of these teams. I don't understand the outrage because, you know, obviously St. John's has a beef from what you hear, but I didn't follow any of them. I just barely found out 2 weeks ago from a grainy picture when a media member went to Indy for the combine. They saw a St. John's game in Indy and they said, oh, Rick Pitino's there. I'm like, oh, okay. That was the first I heard of it. I'm not invested because I'm so invested in the NBA and I'm exactly in the same boat as you. It's gotten to the point where you just follow the local college teams here. And outside of that, I literally, you know, probably I will fill out one, probably just one and go up against my wife just for bragging rights, just to see who gets more points. But I'm not interested in competing because it's truly a crapshoot. I have no idea what's going on. I know a couple players that people list as good players, you know, obviously hearing Greg Campy talk about Illinois and Xavier and different teams like that. But in the end, I am having to do what everybody else does is I would have fun with it maybe and just pick based on the randomness or just say, okay, 112 seed here or there. But I literally, and maybe it's wrong because you can go find the information. It's just not as interesting. It's not as compelling. There's nothing going on. And it just seems like, okay, you got some blue bloods. You got some situations here. But other than really the one story that permeated college basketball was court storming. I heard that make the waves of, oh my God, should you know, the Duke coach bitching about a player getting hurt. That was about it in terms of national college basketball storylines that I paid attention to. And you feel bad because it's March Madness, but other than, you know, Michigan State and Oakland, I'm not interested either, man. And it's crazy, right? It's crazy how college basketball has fallen off. Around the time of Duncan and things like that. It's just falling off steadily.
It's different, right? Like normally, like I said, this is something that you and I get super excited for, and it's not there. And I think you're right. I think gambling has a lot to do with it. I think we've been so inundated with so much else, right? This is one of the first times too where this isn't really, I don't think it's that big of a deal on the calendar because we had the Detroit Lions basically carrying us for a large part of January and towards February. And normally we're kind of on to like mock drafts, we're on to the NFL draft, and we're looking at these things, and we're just looking, by the time like November, December rolls around, we're looking for anything that is sports related. And it usually March Madness kind of fills that for us. It's kind of that bridge to get us to baseball. I think with the Lions having the season that they had, it kind of pushed that down the line. And I think we're kind of in this spot where the draft's going to be here. We are excited for free agency. We're going to talk about that a little bit later on in the show. I think we've had all these other things kind of taking up our interest that when college basketball rolls around, we're kind of like, okay, I guess. And you know, it's one of those things where Michigan has been absolutely horrible. Michigan State, like I said, up and down this year. And then Oakland, like I pay attention to Oakland because I graduated from there. But let's be honest, it's Oakland. What are right. we really expecting Oakland to do here? And look, this is where I'll go out on a bit of a limb. I think out of the two teams, I think Oakland probably has a better shot to go further. And I don't think they're going to go real far, but I think they have a shot to get out of that first round. I know that they're going up against Kentucky. I know it's a Calipari team. I know that Calipari's teams usually underwhelm that first week. And I think Oakland has a guy who could probably go and play at the next level. And sometimes it's all you need. You need that one guy who can get hot and kind of take a game over. I believe last name is Townsend. And he can, like I said, take a game over and he can wreck shop, especially if you've got a Kentucky team that is sleepwalking. If Kentucky rolls in here thinking like, okay, these guys are the Horizon League champs, big deal, whatever, and they don't take them serious, Oakland can jump out to an early lead and really put this game away. I wouldn't say early. It'll come down to the wire, but they could put this game away and put it out of reach for Kentucky, where Kentucky has to play catch-up all day long, and Oakland just sit there and just grind it out. I could see Oakland popping Kentucky and getting into that next round, getting out of that first round, getting into that second round, and playing on that Saturday or that Sunday. As far as Michigan State goes, I mean, this was supposed to be one of Izzo's best teams. This was supposed to be one of Izzo's marquee teams, one of those teams that were supposed to go on and do a whole lot. And they've kind of disappointed all year long. This is a team that is basically sub 500. This is a team that did not have a great showing in the Big Ten tournament. This is a team that hasn't had a great showing all season. And look, I don't know if there's a guy on this roster who you're like, that guy is certified. He's going to the next level. He's going to the NBA. I think you got a couple guys who could maybe play in the G League. I think you got a couple guys who could play overseas. I think you might have a couple guys who could sign some 10-day contracts. But nobody who you're like, yeah, they're going to get drafted and they're going to perform. I just don't see it with this team. And some of the coaching decisions Izzo has made has really left me scratching my head. This does not seem like it's vintage Tom Izzo. So I think you add all of that together, I don't know what to make of Michigan State. I have no clue what Michigan State's going to be. With Oakland, you know, Campy usually disappoints, and it wouldn't be a shocker if he gets bounced in the first round. But all that being said, I could see them getting hot and taking advantage of a Kentucky team that sleepwalks. Yeah. Which one of these two teams do you think makes it further? Is it Michigan State, or does Greg Campy and Oakland have a bit of a shot to maybe get by this first round?
I think it's a long shot. I think that John Calipari would scratch his head and pull his hair out if he lost to his friend in Greg Campy. I think that there's just a little bit more talent. Now, Golke can get hot. I think that if Townsend can, you know, be a guy that can take advantage of the inside, and you know they can kick it out to the perimeter and Golke make some threes. It's going to depend on clearly their defense, because people think that you know, obviously Oakland is a great, their MO is a great shooting team, but Greg Campy had them playing good defense. They fight hard, they play well, and they're confident, and I think that they're going to have a shot. But you know, it's hard pressed to imagine riding in Oakland to defeat Kentucky. That would be a big upset. Some will do it, obviously, to fill it out and to have some level of upset, because there's always typically, you know, the four number one seeds typically don't end up getting to the Final Four. But What's fun is that now, I think for us, me and you, I think we're in the same boat, is that we're going to actually start following college basketball for the next 4 weeks. And that's about it, you know, and that's kind of what it is now in college basketball. It's the tournament. We follow it. And luckily DSP got a credential. I get to go watch a couple games in the Elite Eight at LCA. I think I'll go that Friday for the session, or however that's going to play out, or Friday, Sunday, if that's the way the schedule goes. But I looked at it, I'm like, ah, the region, it's got TCU. It's got some, I'm like, ah, you know, it's not the best region. I would have loved it if Michigan State or Oakland would have had a chance, but they're not probably going to get to they're not going to get past the Sweet 16. I think for State, they could beat Mississippi State. I think Michigan State has the opportunity to advance. I think, you know, Tom Izzo is probably going to have his team really playing well defensively. It's the shooting. It's just, you know, outside of, you know, one or two guys, they don't have a lot of guys that you say, oh, you know, boom, this is the guy you can count on. So I think that, you know, maybe they'll be the revenge factor to beat North Carolina. I want to see it. I want to see State play Carolina, but you know how it goes in those games that are marquee. Michigan State turns the ball over. They have the offensive droughts. They don't play as well. I just want to see them peak. Prove me wrong, because I said that, and I think it's accurate now. Michigan State used to be elite. Now they're middle of the road, and people were like, mm-hmm. oh, my God, no, you're so such a hater. I'm like, it's not that. I mean, they were 19 and 13. Did anybody see anything that indicated that they were just going to light it up in March? Now, they still could, but that's just based on reputation. Based on basketball and what your eyes see, they don't consist. They go through scoring droughts. They don't have enough perimeter shooting. They have rotations that kind of favor veterans, but you got younger guys maybe with more talent that aren't as good defensively but could light up, you know. But you're going to need everybody. You're going to need Hogard. You're going to need more people, Malik Carr, to do some things. You just need a lot more. And for Tom Izzo, I think a lot of people were saying, and I kind of agree with it, but you hate to say it out loud, but we got to be honest. When it got down to 640 and Michigan State wasn't in it, I kind of was like, good. I kind of hope they didn't make it, because similar to what others have said online, it might have sent shockwaves to Tom Izzo, like, whoa, we didn't get in on reputation. Not only did they get in, they gave him a 9 seed, which was crazy. But I would have said, you know what, leave him out. Put in another team maybe that had a nice ranking, a nice NET ranking as they call it nowadays. And you know what? That might have sent Tom Izzo into something where he's made it 25 years and he has to go in the portal. I think when you get there, even though I do believe Tom Izzo is a realist, he knows that he hasn't done a good job coaching. He knows he's not reaching the players in the same way. He knows the grit factor is not the same. I think when you get that little bit of satisfaction that you do get in, doesn't make you work as hard. I think if they wouldn't have gotten in, I would have said that, you know what? They would have made some drastic changes, go to the portal, get a higher level caliber of players. But maybe this year we get lucky. And I think Trey Townsend can transfer because he gets the extra COVID year. And Doug, the one of the key players from Michigan, is transferred now with the mess going on there. So you're like, you know, a couple players that Izzo could pick up locally or get in the transfer portal and add some talent. You know, this year was crazy because there was some hype surrounding Michigan State and it just completely fell off and Michigan was irrelevant. So I look at it like I was, you know, it's good that they got in. It's great to see them, but they're playing at Thursday at noon, whereas Oakland's playing primetime CBS at 7:30 against Kentucky in front of the whole country. So if Michigan State loses, it'll be quickly and we can enjoy the rest of the tournament. But I don't see it. I just think that one and done is the ceiling for Michigan State. And you never go into a tournament thinking that. You at least think, well, hey, they got a puncher's chance to make the Sweet 16. It doesn't feel that way this year, does it?
I don't think so.
No, right.
Look, this team, like I said, has confused me for a while. And I was surprised that they were ranked as high as they were. I thought they were going to get in. I think the committee still looks at them as a blue chip team, still looks at them as one of those blue bloods. But being ranked ninth, I was shocked. And then they're the highest ranked ninth seed was even more perplexing to me. I thought this team would be ranked lower and they would have a little bit tougher of a road to go. I think with this team, with what you have here, right, it is a team that when they are doubted and when they are seated low, they can usually surprise you. They can pop a team. I don't know if you get that this year. I don't know if the mix is there. Like I said, Tom Izzo has confused me with coaching decisions. Tom Izzo has confused me with lineups that he's kind of rolled out there. I've been kind of perplexed by this team all season. And I think you're right. If this team was left out, I think it would have caused a bit of a shakeup, would have caused a bit of a stir, and it would have forced Tom Izzo to kind of adjust what he's doing and change how he's going about building his teams and go about how he's basically constructing these rosters. Because I just don't know what's wrong with the mix. I just don't know what's wrong with what you got here. You've got one of the arguably one of the greatest coaches in college basketball in Tom Izzo. You've got guys who, by all accounts, highly rated, right? You've got guys who have been here for a while. There are guys on this roster who have been here 4 and 5 years. Some of these guys have COVID years, so they get that extended time. So you've got experience. You've got depth. And yet it seems like this team just kind of sleepwalks. Like I said, in the Big Ten, sub 500, they were 10-10, 19-14 this year. It's just one of those things where when they get against higher caliber teams, they tend to disappear. Their record against top 25 teams, I think it's like 2-7. It's not very good. It's just a team that over the course of the last couple of games, last couple of weeks, they've just kind of sputtered to the end. And I wonder if they carry that into the tournament, and that's what basically leads to them getting popped by a Mississippi State team who is gunning for them, who looks pretty decent. At least on paper, they look pretty decent. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Michigan State. It's been a weird season in college basketball, especially around here. Like I said, Michigan is trash. Goodbye, Juwan Howard.
Yeah.
Not like he really even coached at all or did anything. Michigan State has been confusing. And I think the team that has probably played above their heads and probably has played the best is Oakland. And they've got a tough road going up against Kentucky. So it's going to be an interesting weekend, that's for sure.
Yeah, and it's great because, and I'll say this, Greg Campy, one of the most accessible people. I text him. I say congratulations. He's always texted back. And really, I credit Neil Rule and Oakland for allowing us to kind of cut our teeth at the Detroit Sports Podcast, just let us into the building and let us cover the basketball team 4 years ago. So, of course, when he goes on after the win, it was great. Campy's like, man, we lost 4 years in a row in heartbreak. You know who sat in the stands and watched those games? The Doc. I sat there, I think it was at LCA early on in the first year where they're up by a point with a chance to get to the NCAA tournament and the opposing team. And the Horizon League, if you don't know, they only get one bid. You got to win the tournament. And they're up and boom, a guy, I have it on video too. One day I'll send it. I have it on video. And I think if you look at on our Twitter page at Detroit Podcast, it still lives. And the defender kicks it inside and it's a bunny and Oakland loses by one in a heartbreaking fashion. And for a stretch there, that's how they got eliminated multiple times. Every time they'd play at LCA, they'd get to the quarterfinals or the final four and they wouldn't be able to advance when they had really good teams and they had good players. So for Campy to be able to get out there, it's great because he's accessible. And, you know, and reading more about him because people have been writing about him, he went to journalism school. He's a journalist. He understands media. And when you see him talk about sports, he's so measured and he knows a lot. And he sold the program as best as he could from where they are. I think they probably could have made the tournament a lot more, had some breaks fallen their way. But it's good to see a good coach and somebody that's been there 40 years. You know,
that's crazy. You don't ever see that.
40 years
in high end sports.
Yeah,
40 years is nuts.
40 years is crazy, and he's a nice, real person. And it was great because you would see a coach that would still light into his players, like at the arena when he would yell. I would text you. I'm like, man, Campy just is lighting up these kids. And you started to see a little bit of that where players left a little bit because they didn't like it, but he found players that stood the test and were tough, and those are the players that are older and they understood what playing basketball is about. Not a lot of kids could handle it, and some did leave because of playing time and money and Campy screaming his head off, but he withstood it all, and Oakland trusted him, and he got rewarded this year with a older upperclassman-level team. And he got them to buy in, which is most important. And you got a talented individual that can shoot threes, that can cure a lot of ills. Gokey is a guy that has the grit, and with Townsend having the loyalty to Oakland, you don't see that too often. So and we always have respect for Neil Rule and his broadcasts and Oakland because of how they treated us. And Cuz too. Another opening too, Detroit Mercy only won one game, and that is a completely different thing. On the other side of the coin, Detroit Mercy is literally run like a high school team. You go there.
It is horrible.
I go to Callahan Hall once a year, and steadily probably the DSP curse invaded them too. It was popular, and then every year since I started going, there'd be less and less people. And so basically it just fills the lower bowl of the diehards, and there's nothing that symbolizes, I think, hilarity of a program where they win their first game at Callahan, their one and only game, and one dude storms the court and dances. One. It's a it's a viral video. It's one of the funniest videos you're ever going to see. And people are like, yeah, the Mercy fans weren't even energized enough to get on the court when they won their one game. And, you know, it was clear Mike Davis was going to get fired. And he basically did the job to coach his son, and he moved on. To not be able to get anything level of success is crazy. So Detroit Mercy and Michigan have openings, so we'll see what kind of level of talent they get to replace them.
Have you ever been on a team that's been that bad, where you basically win like one or two games all year long, and you just like have to just, you're just looking towards the end of the season. You're just like, how many more games until this is over? Have you ever been on a team like that?
Well, in Little League, I was 1-16, and the only win we got in 9. It was my one and only Little League year. I kept getting beaned in the head, and it just wasn't fun. And so I was 1-done in Little League, 1-16, and our one win because the team didn't show up. So they called me back for more. I was like, I don't want to do this. And then we had a nice progression in my high school tennis team where our first year was pretty bad, but it made us feel bad because we were close. We'd always, in matches, we'd always lose like 4-3. And so we knew we were close, and we knew that we'd like, hey, if you just, the coach told us, hey, if you guys just tried and worked out all year and kind of developed as a team, I like what you guys got. You guys got something here. So we did. We worked out all together. We all became friends, and we got better, and we steadily improved. We never got to states, but we had a winning record the final 3 years. So it was like a Lions progression where we were terrible, but we kind of knew, okay, we got guys here that can play a little bit and compete and work, and if we kind of just stay together and listen to what the coach says, we had a fun run. So I understood that side of it. And then just watching the Lions, you just see, oh, my God, the I-75 eyes, you could see it in a couple of those years when Matt Patricia was there. It was just like, yeah, we're going to tell you what we want to tell you, but we don't give a shit. I get paid. Let's move on. And the guy that embodied that was Darius Slay. And you remember the story where everything was going chaotic. Everything was rocking around. And he's all bobbing his head. And Larry Lage, I respect him so much. He goes, you know, you seem pretty happy. He's like, hell yeah, I'm happy. What's not? I'm like, the team sucks. And everyone was kind of thinking like, the team sucks, bro. And he was always happy. He's like, y'all know payday's Thursday, right? And he's like, I ain't got no problems. And he goes, he started saying, he's like, yeah, direct deposit comes. And the best line he ever said was, he's like, but I got to tell y'all, you got to check them lines. Cause he's like, they short me sometimes. And we're like, what? He's like, yeah, a couple $100 here and there. The check wouldn't be accurate. And so when we wrote those stories, you could tell Matt Patricia was getting pissed and livid, and Darius Slay, because he was happy. He's like, listen, I'm going to be Darius no matter what. I don't care who's coaching this team. And he's like, y'all know I get paid, right? It's coming up. It's Thursday. It's going to be great. Payday's still around the corner. I'm happy. And all of us were laughing, and it was just one of the funniest stories ever told, because he told us like, hey, yeah, we get direct deposit. And he's like, y'all got to check. He's like, I don't know if he was saying it to the other players through the media, but he was like, y'all got to check those numbers because the Lions be shorting me sometimes. And it was so funny. And it was like, you know what? Yeah, it introduced it that, hey, to some people, it's a job. And when you're getting paid, you know, at that time we calculated it was like $700,000-$800,000 every Thursday or every two Thursdays. It's like, you know what? Yeah, how are you going to be really upset? And so it was crazy to see the attitude. But these kids, I get it. And when Nick Saban says, which, I mean, it's a little bit hypocritical of Saban because, you know, that – yeah, he probably was sliding a couple bags to some boosters.
Oh, you think?
Yeah.
He's been doing it for years. Now, all of a sudden, because it's above board and everybody can do it, he can't keep up.
Went to Congress, was like, man, these play. It was kind of a little bit like hypocritical, but he was like, these moms are like, so how much are you going to pay my kid? And I'm like, you know, there is a, if in my situation, if it was different, it was me. I, of course, would ask the question, like, okay, but I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it where his wife is having me and my family over for breakfast. I'm going to have a representative, and it won't go through me. It'll just be like, cuz, you know, go ask Nick how much he's going to pay us. And it'll be like that. And it'll be like, okay, you come back and be like, Nick said you'll get a couple $100,000 to play. I'm like, okay, that's not bad. Go ask a coach at Michigan State how much and see what we got. You know, I think these kids got to kind of negotiate a little bit better, not so overtly. And when your family does it, I guess that's who represents you. I think I wouldn't have a problem if these guys like just had a handler or a lawyer, a nice guy that's kind of representative in a suit, and just say, hey, he needs this much, and let us know. But I think that's kind of how it's got to be if in this big age of money is that you don't have to have a direct conversation with the coach. Just have a handler talk to the guy and let him know, okay, kind of give me a sense of what's going on. Go enjoy breakfast with Nick Saban's wife and learn about the program and all that kind of stuff. I think these families got to kind of play the game, but just do it a little less overtly. Like, yeah, you're going to talk about money, but just do it in a way where a little bit of decorum when you're visiting Nick Saban's family and they're trying to teach you about, like, you know, play the game a little bit. You know, when you go to church, you dress up, you act nice, you say your Sunday best, and you go do your horn from Monday through Saturday. You know what I mean? So you gotta kind of play the game a little bit in order to get the bag. And these kids are just kind of like, hey, how much you paying me? And it's just like, okay, you know, you gotta kind of flirt a little bit and not just throw out how much you need to get paid to handle business. But it's going to be crazy because Campy said that Townsend potentially could leave for another team and they're thinking he could get $500K to play one more year of college basketball.
That's crazy.
It's crazy, right? 1 year, yeah. $500K. And he's like, I'm going to support him and things like that. So that's where college athletics is headed.
You know, it's one of the most interesting things, the way Campy puts his team together. He will normally, you know, it's a smaller school, obviously, right? So you don't really get the cream of the crop. But Campy does such a good job of getting guys and basically giving them second chances. He will go and he will grab a guy who either flunked out of another university or another guy who ran into some type of trouble. And as long as it's not anything big, right, and the kid is remorseful and figured it out, he will bring them in and he will give them a chance. He'll give them all the tools and say, look, if you just clean up your act, you keep it straight and narrow, and you do what you're told, you're going to get playing time, and you have a chance to better yourself. And then he will help put those kids in position to go off and do whatever it is. Like you said, if Townsend can get $500,000, he's going to help support him and help him to do that. And look, this leads to another conversation that we probably won't have today because I don't think we have the time for it. But one day we should have this conversation about how to better NIL. I think NIL has really messed up a lot of things that make college football interesting and make college basketball interesting. But there's got to be ways to make it better and ways to kind of hold the kids accountable, because you have teams that could have made the NCAA tournament, but they don't have enough players to field teams. They don't have enough guys because once the season's over, they're like, all right, cool, who's sending me my next check? And they're leaving, going to the highest bidder. They're all paid mercenaries at this point. I kind of feel like we need to treat this almost like it's pro-light, and we have contracts that are signed. You enter into a one- or two-year contract, or you enter into a three-year contract, and you're held to that contract. You can't break that contract. You know, I feel like we've got to be able to do something like that, something along those lines, because I think it'll make the sports, whether it's college football or college basketball, that much better.
Yeah, I agree. And probably has to do with representation and public disclosure and how they report it. Because there's some contracts, like Dan Campbell got an extension with the Lions. We don't know how much it is. We know it's 4 years, but we have no idea how much money he's making. Same with Brad Holmes. So sometimes the public nature of how much money people are making and how much each school is spending, maybe you look at it and maybe you just kind of hide it behind a curtain a little bit. Because you know kids are getting paid, and you know that, okay, the better players go to the bigger schools. Do we really need to know exactly how much a kid's playing? So we'll talk about it for sure as the summer months approach. Before we talk football, it was interesting to see that Derek Lalonde, his name was getting dragged through the mud after a shitty stretch of play. Still, the Wings have only won one game in that stretch of time since they put the priority patch on. They've recalled defenseman Simon Edvinson, which we said would happen. We'll see if that sparks the team. But what's crazy is the Islanders have kind of fallen off, which has put the Red Wings back in the playoffs, but barely. And it started to go around the internet, highlighted by radio personalities and people talking about it and wondering, like, wait a minute. And I posted it too. I said, wait a minute. When you see a collapse and you see the effort level, there's one thing to lose. And there's another thing to give up a goal every 2 minutes in a game and lose 7-4, 7-3, and not play with effort defensively. That kind of indicates, like what we started to talk about last week with Yzerman, is either Yzerman is not as good as we thought at developing a team currently in terms of depth, if the team is only relying on one dude and they fall off, or the head coach has lost the squad. They've tuned him out. The effort level's not there. They're just going out there playing, and the way in which the Wings played reminded me, at least, of several teams like the Flames, like Columbus, like the Flyers, who have fired coaches midseason. It reminds me of a lot of these teams that have gone through that. Carolina's done it. Boston, you look at teams that have fired coaches, and you realize, you know what? You know, Derek Lalonde should not be fired, but it should be talked about and discussed that his seat should be hotter, because the team is, with what they got, may need a different voice in the room, at least to spark them or to back off, because for some reason, the manner in which they played was terrible defensively, was terrible effort-wise, was terrible execution-wise, and it looked like for a period of time there was no coaching going on. So I don't think he should be fired, but there's something going on with the Wings that smells funny.
I mean, it's that garbage patch that they've got on there.
Yeah, yeah, it's a job. Good. And you dunked it. Yes, for the dunk.
No, I don't think he should be fired either. You have to remember, he's basically a year and a half into this, right? And you've seen a lot of growth from last year to this year. Now, the problem is this team ended up getting hot, won six games straight, and they looked lethal. This was very similar to what happened last year, where this team had a playoff spot, for the most part secured, and then they went on this losing streak where they couldn't figure anything out, couldn't put wins together. He has to figure out a way to pull this team out of those slumps. He has to figure out a way to get this team righted when things start to slip and slide. And look, whether it's because you don't have Dylan Larkin or whether it's your voice is getting a little bit stale, you've got to figure something out. He seems like he's a pretty mild-mannered guy. He seems like he's more of a player's coach, right? So you know what happens when you're a player's coach? Sometimes the guys get a little bit soft because the coaching is a little bit soft. Sometimes you need a little John Tortorella in you. So what happens is when the post-game meal is being served, after you just got smashed 4-1 and the effort level was poor, you know what you do? While the meatballs are hot and sitting on the table and everybody's lining up to get food, you run in there and you flip the damn table over. You throw a couple of things. You kick a garbage can. You sit there, you raise hell a little bit. And you know, sometimes you as the coach, you have to be hated by the team. You have to, in order to galvanize the team and get them to play as one, because we're hearing stories and we're seeing videos of guys getting into fights during practice. Like this team is so frustrated that it's now bleeding over into beating each other up instead of taking it out on the other team. So sometimes you've got to galvanize the team by you becoming the enemy, by you becoming the problem, and you take everybody and they all end up hating you a little bit. And what happens is they all start pulling in the right direction again. And then after that, you can soften up a little bit. You don't got to kick the dinner table over. You don't got to throw the garbage can. You don't got to get into somebody's face and MF them one way and cuss them down the other way and basically tell them that their mother's a whore. You don't have to do that, because now all the guys are playing as one and they're rowing in the right direction. I think sometimes you just got to change up what your message is and how you're delivering it, and that will keep the guys on their toes and keep them going in the right direction. I don't think he needs to get fired, though. I think he just needs to figure out ways to break this team out of these slumps. I don't know if he just requires him going to talk to Stevie and being like, what would Scotty do? What did Scotty Bowman do when you guys started to slide a little bit? And Stevie would probably be like, nothing. We handled it ourselves. Well, it was a different team. You had nothing but aged veterans who understood what was going on. This is still a very young team. Patrick Kane is probably your oldest player on this team if I was to look at the ages. And it doesn't get much older than that. So it's one of those things where you got to kind of figure a couple things out, add a couple of things to your coaching tool belt, and I think you'll be okay. But I don't think he deserves to be fired.
To break it, motherfucker, go play defense. You know what I'm telling you.
do what Scotty did to Sergey.
Exactly.
You're playing defense. Let's go.
Oh, man, it's great. We'll see what happens, but the slide has been embarrassing, and it's just unfortunate that, you know, after now a stretch of games, sometimes you recognize that money is not the end all be all. It's important, and we never discount the factor of money, but to put a garbage patch on the famed winged wheel is just, you know, I don't want to sound like old guy here, but it's just, the winged wheel was so iconic. It didn't need it. Put it somewhere else. I mean, you got all the space in the arena, all the space on the ice. And man, could you imagine your priority? And you're like, all right, we finally got some prime real estate. And now everybody's like, fuck this company. This company sucks. Take the patch off. and you got podcasters every game going, what is this patch? And if you look at polls, a lot of people are like, the Wings are losing because of the patch, because the hockey gods are like, you're greedy and you cannot ruin such a great such a great jersey. And it's crazy to think, you know, you're a company and you're like, we just want some press. You know, we just want to hawk our garbage company and keep it moving. Get a little expenditure marketing thing off of our record here. And they're like, God damn it. And Sal, your stupid ass idea ruined again. And they're like, we told you not to spend the 20 grand on that stupid ass patch. And Sal's like, God, I thought they played good. They were winning. And you got to go to the best part is you got to go to the salesperson and be like, what the fuck? You know, we've been, can you put our patch, can you give us a little bit more airtime because the patch has been sullied and been, our company has taken a hit financially because of this. And then the poor sales guy's got to go to the Wings and be like, can we just talk about, can you have Osgood just say that he uses the company one time and have him stand out in front of his garbage just a couple times? And they'll be like, well, we can't do Osgood, but we'll give you Johnny Kane. He'll go out there. He'll say whatever you want it to say. And they're like, oh, God. So you look at you look at the whole disarray with the thing. You just don't do it. And that's what's happened. And the Wings right now, man, Larkin, come back. Save this team from misery. Only like 10 to 15 games left, and we'll see. It's going to be a tight race to get into the postseason. No guarantees, but we'll be here to follow it all the way through. All right, one last topic, and it's going to be positive because I think everybody in town is real thrilled, especially when you see how other teams are spending. I think fans have come around and they said, okay, you got us, Graham Glasgow, affordably. You're not paying anybody $17 million. And I think the hardworking fans of Detroit are very happy they got a cheap veteran at 34 years old to play left guard or play right guard if you want to decide to move Graham to the left side. But they're very happy, and it's interesting in that I think fans should always demand that the team spend, and the idea that, yeah, congratulations, Brad. Brad's the king. Brad's cooking because he got a bunch of affordable deals. It's great, but at the same time, you still can't discount those that say, you know, if you just would have splurged on Robert Hunt, he would have been nice on this line. You move Graham over, and you just splurge a little bit, and you figure out how to kick the can down the rope. Did you really need Amik Robertson on this team? Yeah, he's a role player, but at the same token, if you just save some money here and splurge on one player, it's not the end of the world. Like, one splurge is not like, oh my God, but now we're in the phase. And it's okay, I like it, I respect it, but Adam and I don't kind of do that. We don't drink Brad Holmes' bathwater, or we don't drink the Lions' bathwater. We call it like we see it, and we kind of maintain our masculine composure here. The funny part is I'm seeing now, Brad's the king. Brad's our king. Cook Brad. I'm like, okay, guys, if you're a male fan, I dare you to take a video out and stand next to Brad and shake his hand and tell him you're the king. He'd be looking at you like, what? I'd be like, come on, man. You know, just keep it moving. Like, you can be a fan, but you don't got to call me the king. And that's what I would say. I'd be like, you don't got to call me the king. Just doing the job, trying to save some money, just trying to manage the cap. I'm nobody's king. You don't need to drink my bathwater. But the fans here are so starved for success that one appearance in the NFC Championship game has just made everybody blush and say, everything he does is great. He's done good. You can't knock for what he's doing. But at the same token, you can have the discussion. Hey, what about a Wilkins? What about a dominant guy that hasn't come off an injury? What about a guy that is special? What about trading for T. Higgins? What about looking at the offense in terms of free agency? What about spending a little bit more here and less here? You're allowed to do that. It's not like you're being a hater, because the reason you do it and debate it is for the better good of the team. And so for me, I feel good about free agency. I feel good about the way in which the cap has kind of been managed. But at the same token, I wouldn't have minded a splash, a spending spree. It wouldn't have hurt this team, because you look at it, at some point, Dan Campbell is going to have to coach superstars. And I believe he will at some point start. And you got these guys like St. Brown, Hutchinson, and Penei Sewell. They're all going to start making a bunch of money. So eventually speaking, you're going to have to start. So I'm okay. B plus is how I grade free agency. I think that there is something to talk about in regards to some of the moves that were made.
Yeah, look, I like what he's done more so this week than last week. And look, we have one of these positions with this platform where it's not one of those wait and sees. It's react to what is going on and give an opinion, tell what you feel, what you think, and how you see it. And look, I like the signing of DJ Ritter. I think that really helps strengthen that interior defensive line. I think him teamed with Aleem McNeil, I think you've got two of the best interior defensive linemen. I still think you're lacking on either side of those guys. You've got Aiden Hutchinson, and then who else? It's a question mark. You know, I don't know if Houston's going to be what you want him to be. I don't know if Davenport's going to be anything. So I still feel like you can add to that room. You can add to that position and you can make it better. Now you do have the draft, so you could do something there. We've talked about this where I feel like edge rushers are guys that you can bring in right away and they'll make an impact. Cornerbacks generally, that doesn't transition that way. It usually takes a year. And then you look at what they've done with the cornerbacks. Cornerbacks are definitely stronger now than they were at the end of the year. And to be honest with you, I like, Amik Robinson. I like him more than Carlton Davis. I think he might be a better fit than Carlton Davis. Carlton Davis, I think, will give you some good snaps for part of the season. Guy's always hurt. It's never like it's a major injury. It's not like he blew out his knee or blew out a hip or ripped a hamstring off the bone, but it's a tweaked hamstring. It's a banged up knee. It's a toe injury. It's this or that where he just misses games. And that is frustrating as a fan. That is frustrating when you're watching a guy who you feel like could possibly go out there and give you some snaps, but he's just too nicked up. It's always that term nicked up, which is super frustrating. But yeah, I think what you've seen is Brad Holmes do a lot of little things. We talked about it before. B-tier talent, right? Those second-tier guys. I think Ritter's a guy who's maybe just on the outside of tier one. I think he's a guy who's going to come in and give you quality time. But the thing is, all of these guys that he goes out and gets, they're all generally on one-year deals, and he's restructured a couple of these to save cap space. They still have like in excess of $20 million in cap space, which is crazy. You can still go spend money, or you can re-sign Amon-Ra St. Brown, or you can re-sign Jared Goff, and you have money to spend still after all of that. But all of these guys, it seems like he has a bit of a type, right? He's got guys who either are budding and have not yet hit their stride, and he can predict that future or thinks he can predict that future. So he's willing to give them that one-year contract to go out there, earn it, and show it. Or these are guys who are coming off of devastating injuries, and it's their bounce back year. And you're bringing them in because you can get them for cheap, and they did a really good job up until they had this crucial injury. I mean, look at Mosley last year, right? In ACL, the guy played one snap, and he blew out the other ACL. You look at DJ Ritter, again, a guy who I feel like is just on the outside of that tier one as far as a interior defensive lineman. He's blown out both of his quads, not in back-to-back years. I think it's been two quads over the course of 3 years, but it's still, that's a devastating injury. You and I watched Vince McMahon blow out his quad in the middle of a ring. You and I have watched Triple H blow out his quad in the middle of a wrestling ring. We've seen this happen. Now, you can rehab and you will come back and you can be better from it, but it's one of those things where, man, that's a tough injury to rebound from. And you look at Carlton Davis, who I already said is a guy who's constantly nicked up. This seems to be the type, right? Either you are an underdog and he really likes you and feels like he can get the most out of you, or you're coming off a really bad injury and he feels like he can get a deal on you. And because he can get that deal on you, he wants to sign you. I think this team is better. I think this team still has a lot of question marks with some of the moves he made, because health is something that you can't predict. Either you were hurt or you're going to get hurt. It's one of those two. And the hope is the guys that were hurt don't get hurt again. We don't have an Emmanuel Mosley situation where you're out there, you're playing for a snap, you're playing for a couple of downs, and then next thing you know, you are sidelined. The hope is that does not happen. So we'll see what happens. But I think with what he's done thus far, I feel better about this team. I feel like he's added a lot of depth to this team. I feel like he's addressed a couple of positions that were of great need. I still feel like there's still work to be done. And we are getting to that back half of free agency, right? So a lot of the big names, they're all gone. Quite a few of those tier two free agents, those guys are gone. There are still guys out there that can come in and make an impact to this team. I think with what Brad Holmes has in the piggy bank, I think he still needs to go out there and add a little bit more depth to the defensive line. I think he needs to bring in a edge rusher who can make an impact, who can give you at least two downs. I think Houston's going to be your third down edge rusher, all right? And maybe Davenport will be the same. I don't know. We'll see what happens there. But I think you need to get a guy who can go out there and give you first and second down and help make an impact, because Aiden's going to be out there all day long. The guy's nonstop. Motor doesn't quit. So I'd like to see them take some of that $20 million they have laying around and take some of it and go give it to somebody. Give them, you know, $7, $10, $12 million. Get them in here and let those guys make an impact. You just seen Chase Young. And look, Chase Young would not fit here, right? That's been established. But Chase Young just got scooped up on a one-year deal. There are still guys out there who have the gusto, who can go out and give you plays, can go out and make an impact, and you can still get them. You can get them for a relatively affordable contract, and you still have a ton of money in your piggy bank. I want to see them go make one more impactful move, and I want to see them address the opposite side of Aiden Hutchinson with somebody who's going to give them first and second down play. With the money they've got left and with the amount of time we have before the draft, is there a position that you want them to go out and address in free agency, or are you good enough with what they've done so far? Do you feel like this is a better team and they're good and they can roll into the draft with what they've got and address any other positions or look for guys to develop and build, so when these guys end up leaving town, you've got their backups already ready to go? Do you feel comfortable with what this team has, or is there still somebody out there that you feel can make an impact to this team?
I think it's just one position, and it's on defense. It's safety, and I think Quandre Diggs, another veteran, an opportunity to come full circle, a player that wants to be here, that understood what the culture is about, and has been productive. So that kind of fits the mold, and I think he'll be affordable. And I think he'll be a player that would come in and be a nice mentor for Brian Branch, a mentor for Kirby Joseph, and for Ifeatu Melifonwu. I think it's a perfect fit. I don't see too many flaws, too many negativity, other than maybe they feel like, okay, they're pretty stacked at the safety position and they can go younger in the draft. But it'll be interesting to see if they are done. If they are, like I said, to B+. But I don't think the team, you know, and here's the way I look at it philosophically. Just because you pay a player doesn't mean that he's going to automatically, you know, be a diva or be a bust or you know, we talked about, you know, a change in attitude if you're somebody that gets the bag. But at the same token, you do want to, you know, I know you want to reward your own, and the bag's going to go to St. Brown, who's going to be featured on Netflix soon. You're going to give the bag to Jared Goff, Aiden Hutchinson. You want to pay your own. At the same token, there is a value in building the competition in practice with better players. Like, Wilkins is a better player. He instantly makes Graham Glasgow better. He instantly makes Zeitler better by having to go and bang against each other in practice. And so I just say that you recognize and you hope that you got to remember too, Taylor Decker, 30, Zeitler, 34, Reader, 29. You've gotten a little bit older. So Graham Glasgow, 32. So football, it wears on you. And a lot of teams are going a little bit and seeking, you know, offensive linemen that can play into their 30s. But at the same token, you know, you're going to have to mix in the likes of a Colby Sorsdahl, a Coyote Awosika. So we'll see. And in the draft, I do believe they're going to draft another guard, potentially Jackson Powers. So we'll see how it plays out. But to me, safety probably is a position of depth that you could fill, maybe a wide receiver. But at the same token, that's probably a position in the draft. So in my mind, they filled the needs. But at the same token, they went reasonable, affordable, which is fine given the makeup of this team. The talent is already there. You're just looking for support. But at the same token, I could argue this team is only three players away, that they could have made a push all in and just say, okay, we want Hunt, we want Wilkins, and we want T. Higgins. And just boom, let's go for it in 24. What Brad is doing, and if you're a poker player, you get it, is that you got a million chips in the table, but he's only putting $250,000 in, and he's only willing to risk $250,000 in a pot. Fuck it, dude. You're late in the game, and you're 16th and two tables left. there's going to be a couple times where you see the guy that's a little tight shaking his hands when he's trying to put the chips in, and you're just like, a million, and you got an 8-7 suited. Sometimes you just got to put that million on the table, and once in a while, the guy's going to call you with an ace-king, but sometimes that eight's going to spike, and you're like, bam, damn, I eliminated the guy, and you get lucky, you know? So you got to sometimes push those chips in the middle. If you're only going to sacrifice, sometimes you then get blinded out, and you end up finishing sixth instead of going for it. The guys in poker that win it are the aggressive ones, and I think with where this team is at, those three dudes could have put you over the edge. And I know the sustainability thing is great, but again, I'm all in favor. If it happens, win it one and fall off the mat for the next decade, I'm good. I'm satiated. I won't call for your head. I don't care. You can make all that. You could be in cap hell. You could pull a Russell Wilson move with Jared Goff and just pay him $50 million and then be like, oh, we don't like you the next year, and be like, Jared Goff has a $45 million cap hit. I'd be like, I don't care. You got us a ring. So there's another side of it. And it doesn't mean that we don't like Brad Holmes. We like Brad Holmes. But there's other ways to cook a cake. You know what I mean? You can do it low and slow. You can do it with a lot of cream. You can do it with a lot of sugar. You can do it with, you know, in a way that some people like bundt cakes, where you just put a little bit of a thing in there and you just do your thing. There's a lot of different ways to get to wins in the NFL. And hopefully this is one. Maybe this is going to be something that's a start of a sustained thing. But without that star quarterback, it doesn't kind of feel like a team that's going to be like the Chiefs and the Patriots and just win 2-3 Super Bowls. So we'll see if Brad Holmes ever ups the aggression. But it's been fun. It's been a fun free agency period. It's been good to talk about the Detroit Lions as they approach the draft and the moves that they were made. But at the same token, don't hate on the debaters, man. It's fun. It's boring. Again, your account's boring, and I don't follow you. I don't pay attention if you're calling Brad Holmes a king or if you are an individual that's just like, see, Brad Holmes is the best. And that's all you say. Well, then, okay, I get it. When Brad Holmes makes a draft pick, he's the best. When Brad Holmes makes a third round pick, he's the best. It's like, okay, there's going to be some of us that say, well, yeah, you could have had this guy too. What do you think? That's what makes sports a lot more fun, in my opinion. Make sure you follow Adam on Twitter at AdamRSGROZ. Follow the network at Detroit Podcast. Our 60 minutes are up. Man, I love the opportunity to catch up with Adam, break down sports, have a good time with it. 11 years strong. And finally, maybe the Lions are in the conversation to be a Super Bowl champion. It's great to talk about a good football team as they build, make their moves, make their free agency decisions. It's always great. And we're able to do it thanks to the support of everybody that listens. Anywhere you listen to your favorite audio content, make sure you type in Detroit Sports Podcast and type in your Detroit Sports Podcast, and our content will find you. You hit that like and subscribe button, and every time we air a show, it'll come directly to your phone. Hey, LeBron's getting into it. You know, JJ Redick has a podcast. Caitlyn Jenner and the former relative of Caitlyn Jenner is now doing a podcast. So different pairings are joining up to talk about life and sports. So it'd be very interesting to see. Adam and I have been at it now for well over 11 years and 550 episodes, and we appreciate it. And it's been fun to be in early in the podcast game, because I can't wait for next week as we get to see who's in the Sweet 16. I hope it's Michigan State, maybe Oakland. We shall see. Cuz, thank you so much for the time.